Welcome, one and all, to episode 377 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. And for this episode, we touch upon the year 1987. Such a big year for some, such a letdown for others. It was an important year in music nonetheless. Let's see where everyone voted, where the albums rank next.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
For these last few episodes like this, I've reached out to not only just my patrons. Yes, my patrons do vote on these albums. They submit their own top 10 list, their 10 favorites of the year. But I've also reached out to other podcasters, other fans of the show, other people online, various platforms. And I take all of the top 10 lists that are sent to me and essentially work my magic, per se. Yeah, there's no magic there. It's pretty simple. You rank an album at number one, it gets 10 points. You rank it at two, it gets 9 points, all the way down to number 10, which gets 1 point. And that's how we come upon this list. I'm pleased with the way things turned out, although, as I mentioned during the show, it is probably the first time where I'm not thrilled about the top 10 because probably about half of the albums I don't kind of care for. They weren't albums that I was huge on when they came out, and they haven't really aged well, in my opinion. But it isn't about me. It's about the whole conglomerate. It's about everyone's voting. It's about talking about music and just sharing stories and getting people engaged to check albums out that maybe they hadn't checked out in the first place, or maybe they had forgotten about. And it's cool to see people kind of come out of the woodworks and talk about just music. You know, this is, it's a community here. I think there's a place for everyone, regardless what show you do. There's a little something for everyone to check out here. And ultimately, I will post the top, I think it's 64 albums that people voted on, and they're all over the place, but that's what makes it cool. It makes it cool that we don't all listen to the same stuff, and it gives people a chance and a choice to check out other stuff that maybe they wouldn't have checked out otherwise. Recording this in the middle of a thunderstorm, I don't know if that's a good thing or not. But real quickly, I do want to send a shout out to my patrons, Sean Richman, Chris Sinzak, Tony Espin, Anthony Mackey, Ed Ferguson, Johan, Metal Dan, Jose in Connecticut, the Metal Dentist Gabriel, YargMetal.com, Brad Dahl, Mike Jones, Jeremy Weltman, Steve Hoker, and Steven Saylor. Thank you guys for all of your support. Yeah, that list keeps getting smaller as time goes by. Really nothing I can do. I can't hold a gun to people's head to commit to Patreon. I do like to say that it is a fun atmosphere, is a fun community to discuss music, and everyone's economic situation is different. So if you can join us on Patreon, that's awesome. You can do so for as little as $2 a month. If you can share or like the stories or the posts online, I should say, that's awesome. In any event, just go to signalsfrommars.com to check out all the various ways you can follow the show, subscribe, check out the replays of the video versions of Signals from Mars, pick up merch, support the show, so on and so forth. Thanks for listening to this. I know that a lot of big shows have been saying this lately, shows that I listen to have been saying, you know, thanks for listening. There's a million other things you can check out, but it means a great deal that you're checking out my show. I've been saying that for a few years now, folks, and I'm not bullshitting you. Anyway, thanks really for checking this out, and let me know, did your favorites make the list? Here we go with 1987. Welcome, one and all, to the March 15th, the Ides of March are upon us, edition of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor, and we are joined from a lot of friends from around the world. Let's see, next to me, I have Johan from Sweden. I have Jeremy in the UK. I have Metal Dan in California. Brad in Idaho, Ed in Kentucky, and have Anthony Mackey in Ireland. How is everyone tonight?
Doing great.
Yeah, good thanks.
Excellent. I didn't purposely do this, but the people in the States are lined up in the middle. And we have Edgar Winterson in the chat. Thank you for joining us, sir. Well, this is our 1987 albums countdown. These are always fun. These are always momentous occasions. A lot of different comments, a lot of different... how could you not have made that album number one, Johan? So we'll see if we get any of those this week or this episode. Trying to get Johan fired up right in the beginning. But 64 albums voted on. There's all types of albums on here. There's hard rock, there's metal, there's rock. There's some straight up pop that people voted for as well. There is usually a rule that says no live albums or EPs, and live albums and EPs got voted on. So there's a kind of a pretty big EP that came out in 1987. So anyway. Right. And just there's some things that were voted for that, yeah, they're not technically metal or hard rock, but I think that the bands influenced enough hard rock or metal bands for it to be good enough to be on there. Yeah, Edgar Winterson is saying Bobby Brown, don't be cruel for him. So there you go.
Hear me?
If I go through all 64 albums, which I'm not going to because we don't have time to do it, but along the lines of Bobby Brown, there's Prince, there's U2. A lot of people voted for Music for the Masses by Depeche Mode, actually. George Michael got voted for. There you go. Sting got voted for. Yeah.
Dude, did Chris Zinczak vote on this stuff?
He did not vote for this.
All right, can't blame him then.
So he did not participate in this, and he hasn't participated in one of these in a very long time. So
he's a good human.
No. Anyway, we're just going to talk about, we'll do 15 through 11 real quickly as we usually do. And we're going to see kind of a mix here. And then we're going to do 10 through 1. I will say this right off the bat. This is probably the first time that we've done one of these album countdowns where I dislike a lot of the top 10. I will leave it at that. I will say that out of the top 10, there are 5 albums that I do not care for. But I'm not the only one who voted. So this is a majority thing here. And we'll go around and talk about some of these albums. And actually, good thing with that is that I will probably keep my mouth closed more so than usual. But anyway, At 15, an album that I have behind me, it is Black Sabbath's Eternal Idol. At 14, it is an EP. It is a very important EP. It is Metallica's, the 595 EP, Garage Days Revisited. First appearance of Jason Newsted with the band. And I've listened to this so much that I almost forgot it was an EP. Come on, Edgar Winterson. Luther Vandross, okay. You claim to be from the UK. Is Luther Vandross even big in the UK? Come on.
He's got to be big somewhere.
He's big in Oprah Winfrey's house. I know that.
Oh, I'm glad you said house.
Huge. Okay. 13, an album that I think is fucking excellent. But I think a lot of people may gripe about, hey, that's not hard rock, that's not metal. But it's a good rock album. It is In Excess with Kick.
I love that album. Yeah, I didn't vote for it because I was trying to stay on the hard rock kind of end of things. But I would have voted for it. That's definitely a top 10 album for me.
I've listened to quite a bit of In Excess lately, kind of revisiting some of their... some of my more favorite tracks by the band. And unfortunately, I think it's a band that has gotten forgotten about, but has been pretty much solid throughout their entire career. I mean, outside of the last two albums that they released, one without Michael Hutchence, which wasn't great. And the last one with him wasn't great, but outside of that, everything else has been pretty solid. Anyway, moving on. If not, we won't get to everything. Number 12. An album that a few people voted on, could be called Self-Titled Debut by Freely's Comet, could be called Ace Frehley, Freely's Comet. Metal Dan is shaking his head at this. An album that I've played a lot. I can still remember grubbing this cassette off of somebody on our school trip to Washington in 88. Listening to it and subsequently buying his live EP as a result on that trip, spending all my money on that instead of knickknacks from Washington. Anyway, and at number 11, Marillion with Clutching at Straws.
How did that not make the top 10?
It's just not, that doesn't bode well.
It didn't make the top 10 by much. I will say that.
All right, Marillion. That's another Marillion album I guess I need to listen to.
It's a very good one, Brad.
Of course.
And I'm trying to see if I messed this up. No, I didn't. Okay, so at number 10. Let's see if anyone here can speak to this album. I sure as shit can't. It is the only album by this band that I do not own. So I will leave it at that. At 10, they had a huge hit in the UK with kind of the title track off of this. It is Crazy Nights by Kiss.
Here's a little song for everybody out there.
Anyone want to talk about this album? All right.
I didn't vote for it.
I didn't vote for it.
Yeah.
Quite a few people voted for this album. This, to me, is the worst thing they ever released.
What I will say, though, is that that song was a massive hit, and I suppose that's why a lot of people vote for the album. You know, I thought the song itself was great at the time when it came out, but I didn't really listen to a lot of the other songs on it, to be fair. And you know, on reflection, it's not that great in their catalog, is it?
No, it's, but to me, by far, as being the massive Kiss fan that I am, I can't stand this album. When that song came out, that was the first single. Wasn't into it. Second single was, I think, Reason to Live, which was a sappy ballad. Didn't like it. Turn On the Night was the third single. Just more them trying to be Bon Jovi at the time and just didn't like it. The only decent songs off of this is the one track that they gave to Wendy O. Williams for her Wow album, Thief in the Night. And there's some other songs off of this that are kind of okay, but nothing really all that memorable. And had Mr. Sinzak voted on this, this is his favorite Kiss album, it would have been higher. So thanks for not voting on it.
Victor, so this one is not in your top 10?
No.
So
this wouldn't even be in, this wouldn't even be, let's see, there's 64 albums on here. I don't even think it deserves to be in the top 64.
Correct. You can't do this now, I don't think, but I think there needs to be, somebody's taken over the list. I'm going to say this rudely. And maybe a recount of the people that are in this group right here and what these fuckers have to say about the top 10. All right? All right, my gripe is done. I'm done with it.
Number nine, yeah, another album.
I'm taking the minutes for this week's meeting. So okay. Number nine. Everybody, the Patreon people who's not here now, you're going to be talking to me, okay?
Okay.
So I will report to you, Dan. All right.
Let's see. Number nine, another album that I think is, I don't remember if any of you guys voted on this, but definitely not one of my favorites either. And this falls along the lines of Crazy Nights. It is Girls, Girls, Girls by Motley Crue.
Ooh.
Wild Side is a great fucking song. There is nothing else on this that is even remotely close to that song. Nothing. Whenever this album gets brought up, I think about the song Dancing on Glass and how shitty that fucking riff is, and thinking how what crap this band turned into after two fucking great albums, and then Theater of Pain, which was a pretty good album, I think. Then what was this? So for as much as, and I know that there's a lot of people that love this and Dr. Feelgood, and I think both albums are utter horseshit. That's just my opinion. But anyway, Brad, you're calling a timeout. Do you want to talk about Girls, Girls, Girls?
Yeah, you need to first of all cue up Boom Goes the Dynamite for that. I'm going to tell you right now, instead of doing top 10 albums, we should do the bottom 10 of Victor's albums, because listening to you rant about these albums is better than listening to us talk about how awesome they are. So.
And Boom Goes the Dynamite.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah, this is Victor's barbecue. Victor's house of barbecued bats.
No, there are going to be other ones that are up farther that I know that that some of you guys are going to have rebuttals on.
But this bodes well for the show, Victor. Keep it rolling, man. Okay, so we got two swings and misses here. One more and you're out.
All right.
Show's over. You got at least five and a half here.
All right. I don't think it's that bad an album. I don't think it's that bad an album, to be fair. I think there's a few good songs on it. It's not obviously not their best album, but I don't think it's that bad.
Well done, Jeremy. I'm serious too. I'm not being a smartass. I know it's hard to believe, but yeah.
I respect your opinion, but the album does nothing for me. That's all. there are going to be others farther up on the list, Jeremy, where you'll probably be a little bit more belligerent with me. So anyway, at number eight, an album that I actually really like, was the first ever CD that I bought. I think it's one that a lot of people forget about because of how massive some of their earlier albums were, but this was kind of this was the end of the original run of the band. It is Back for the Attack by Dokken. As much as Under Lock and Key probably gets a lot more press than this album, as much as Tooth and Nail obviously gets more press
than this album. I think this is right up there with Tooth and Nail. I listened to this not that long ago. Just one Sunday sitting in a basketball game, I decided to listen to a bunch of classic albums. In my opinion, this was one of them. And I think this was George Lynch really showcasing the goods on riffs, on just a lot of different things. Is there anything as big as, again, as Just Got Lucky or Into the Fire or the song Tooth and Nail? No. But there are songs off of here that are just, that are really good songs. And it, to me, lends itself to a lot of the discussions that we've had comparing George to a Vivian Campbell, to a Jake E. Lee. I think this was part of his legacy and part of his resume. And comparing it to a lot of what he does now, a lot of it now is quantity over quality. I think a lot of this was quality, a lot of what he did here. But that's just my opinion. Anyone else want to speak about Back for the Attack?
I agree with you that it's really good. You know, by 87, I'd quit listening to Dokken because I was all thrash metal that year. But since I've been collecting vinyl for the last 10 years, I've got that one and listened to it and realized that it is a very good record. And it's one I'm going to, you know, keep in my collection.
Cool. Anyone else? Go ahead, Brad.
I'll go. Yeah, I think it's an unbelievably great album. I mean, from start to finish, there's no like, you know, skip stuff. There's no ballads. I think I'm pretty right on that.
Seven Cent.
Nah, that's not really a ballad, though. That's, I don't know. It's more of a bluesy grind kind of song. I mean, the band was all set to be huge at that point. And then, of course, they imploded and there you go. They never got there. But this album, I think, would have got them there. It didn't have all the singles that the previous one did as far as, you know, hit songs. But it's a great listen. You can't put it on and go, well, you could, but.
You don't think it had the singles that Under Lock and Key had? Burning Like a Flame, Dream Warriors?
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Dream Warrior. Yeah.
Come on, Brad. See,
I forgot about those, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
What were you at, an Accept show and some yeah. bingo hall in Anaheim when this album came out?
No. But I think I saw him at the Monsters of Rock. On the tour for this album,
yeah,
with Van Halen, Scorpions, Dokken,
Kingdom Come,
Metallica,
Kingdom Come.
Yeah, Kingdom Come. Yeah. That was a great show. Dokken was fantastic, but yeah, it just didn't happen for him. So, yeah, if you haven't listened to this album or haven't listened to it for a long time, put it on again because it's a good listen.
I would, and I'll say this before moving on. I would put all the Dokken albums up to here against the Rat albums that came out and the Motley Crue albums. And to me, Shout at the Devil and Too Fast for Love probably eclipse anything that those three bands have done. But if we take their catalogs, their first five albums, I'd probably take Dokken's first five over Motley Crue and Rat's first five.
Good one.
Johan, go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. It's from a Scandinavian perspective. Dokken were never huge here. Perhaps.
Or anywhere.
Yeah, press almost big, but I don't think that they deserve to be on the top 10 of 1987. And I mean that by all my heart. I'm very, very excited to see what comes ahead, but I'm really surprised that Dokken came so high compared to what was released that year. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But Dokken, not my favorite. Excellent band, absolutely, absolutely, but not top 10, not by a long shot. No way.
It's not looking good. Okay. Not looking good at all.
Johan chimes in and sounding the alarm is Johan. All right. Number 7. I just mentioned the guitarist for this band a second ago. It is Dio with Dream Evil. Dan, you're shaking your head on this one, and Johan is giving a thumbs up. So we're at opposite sides of the spectrum here. Johan, what do you have to say about Dream Evil then?
Well, easy one. First time I saw Dio on this tour, so it's a special one for me. Quite good album. Not the best, not the worst, but if you listen back now, it has its moments, and I think it deserves to be in top 10, or not. But yeah, this year is so hard, but for me, it's a top 10, at least when I was at that age. So, but it's a great album, and it has its moments. Thank you.
What I'll have to say is my album that's going to trump Johan's is going to be in the list, and he's going to disagree with mine. Hmm. That's coming soon. Stay tuned.
I think you guys will have a happy medium shortly. So,
wow.
Edgar, you're actually very off base. I think you'll find that this whole group listens to a lot of different music. Not just what we're talking about here. There's a lot of other people that voted that are not included here. And that's why a lot of these albums are up there. For those that are in the know, I'm actually seeing Depeche Mode this coming week. Johan voted on Sisters of Mercy. Anthony has a band that isn't exactly hard rock or metal. I would classify it more as like indie rock, probably. Anthony, is that fair? Middle Ages?
Mm-hmm. Oh, has a band. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Jeremy just flashed Spice Girls.
Not in that year. Just an example of things we listen to here.
Yeah. So, and we listen to all. And Ed listens to all types of '80s stuff, as well as a lot of death metal stuff. So we're all over the place. So this isn't really a one trick pony here.
Yeah, I've been listening to The Hives lately and the blues stuff. So, yeah, I'm trying. And I do listen to Depeche Mode. I do have more respect of them now than I used to.
See? There you go.
Whoa.
Ed's dogs agree.
Yeah. And don't forget about Weird Al either.
There you go.
Ed's listening to Black Dog by Zeppelin.
There you go. All right. At number 6... Yes, the new Hives is very excellent. At number 6, an album that I absolutely love. It is behind me over this shoulder, right over there. A lot of people will complain, oh, it sounds too much like AC/DC. I don't care. I think it sounds fucking great. It is Electric by The Cult. It is one of my all-time favorite albums. It's probably my second favorite by the band. Again, we talk about guitar heroes. I don't think Billy Duffy gets enough recognition as a guitar player with how diverse he is, with how diverse the band is, and how he can fit in and do a lot of different things, from textured guitars to, I mean, not full-on shredding, but he can do some pretty cool shit on guitar. How about that? Anyway, I really enjoy this album. I'm happy that it's in the top 10. Anyone else want to talk about Electric by the Cult?
When sure. it comes, go ahead.
I never heard it.
You never heard it?
some song, but no, absolutely not. I don't know why. It's like Led Zeppelin. I never had a urge to follow that band. And The Cult is that band for me, and Led Zeppelin is also. So I don't know why. I'm sorry to say that, but
no, it's fine.
Yeah.
This is your homework for this week, Johan. You got to listen to this album. It's really good. And the funny thing is, I kind of thought they were sounding like Led Zeppelin more than AC/DC when this album came out. I was like, that's exactly what they're going for.
But it's something with the cover of the album and with the singer, with the, you know, the
fuzzy hat.
Yeah. No? That made me feel he's trying too hard. So I never could listen. So it's something about that. No, impossible. But I'm sure it's good. Absolutely.
Go ahead, Dan.
I love Rush, by the way.
Whoa, he's out of the closet.
Who knew? Who knew Johan really liked Rush?
I have a Rush calendar now. I'll show it on the screen in just a little bit. When it comes to this album, this is the only one by The Cult that I really listen to. And this is what I would call a perfect album, which I think, and I don't have a podcast, but if I had a show, I'd do an episode on your perfect albums. That's something that I think takes an opinion that you can't really search on. I don't know if there's a search engine to find that or what people feel is perfect. But from top to bottom, it's perfectly put together. This album is a banger and has been listened to by me over and over. And that's The Electric.
Ed, by the way, on that tour, they wore t-shirts that where they call the tour the We Don't Belong Tour.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I never saw that. That's funny.
Because they knew that the crowd hated them and that they really had nothing to do with with that crowd. And Lars was a huge fan of what they'd done, and it was one of the reasons why they wanted to work with Bob Rock was because he had worked with them. Yeah. So all right. There you go. Rush calendar. Nice.
Very nice. Where every year is 2112.
There you go. At number five, I'm pleased that this is a top five album because I feel that this band with this album created a subgenre of metal that a lot of people have tried to duplicate. And every time I get a shitty promo from some band trying to do what they did on this album and some subsequent albums, it makes me go back to this album. Totally. Well, this is just part one, but part two does it as well. It is Helloween with of the Seven Keys. This was something that I came to Spain and everyone was fucking playing Helloween and Manowar, I remember at the time. And Manowar, I could take it or leave it. There's songs that I like and songs that I don't really care for. But man, Keeper of the Seven Keys, both part one and part two. Again, they invented power metal with this album. And so many bands have tried to imitate it. And I don't think anyone has come even remotely close to doing what they did. You can take your Hammerfall, you can take Sabaton, you can take any of these bands that have tried to mimic what Helloween did with those two albums. And even Helloween afterwards just became a copy of themselves, which kind of, I almost preferred that they went off in other directions instead of just saying, this worked. So let's just continue to put these albums out. So Keeper of the Seven Keys. Go ahead, Johan.
Yeah. My number one this year. It's I was 1987, I was 15. And this was, if you were a metalhead, the freshest thing that you could listen to in Sweden. It was new. I mean, power metal was, Halloween was there before, but it was more, you know, messy. But when this record was released, it was clean and it was nice melodies. It was fast. And at that time, we thought heavy. So I really, for this album is my one of my absolute favorite albums, and I still listen to it, as you know, to this day. It was so groundbreaking, and as you were saying, Victor, Manowar Fighting the World came at this year as well, and those two albums were really important for the whole movement in Sweden, like Sweden Rock Festival and so, and the importance of those two albums, and especially Halloween, are here in Sweden and Scandinavia, I would say, massive. So if you compare to like albums like Welcome to the Jungle, this one is bigger here than Welcome to the Jungle, not in sales but in the movement. Yeah, that's my statement so far. Thank okay. you.
Fighting the World, by the way, 41 on this list.
What?
Way too low. That's ridiculous.
What?
That album's perfect.
Dan, what did you want to say about Keeper of the Seven Keys?
Yeah, I mean, it sets the sound. It sets the sound for the band. I think they keep trying to. They should want to go to that sound because that is Halloween. This album, most importantly, and then the follow up sets the tone for the band for their future. And they can't duplicate it. It's like Queensryche doing Mindcrime. It's perfect. It's perfection, and you can't get that from the bottle anymore. And that's what it's, I'm glad that it's this high. I think if this group was voting, this could be the number one, since I had it at number two. So there you go. Yeah.
All right.
Nice one.
Number four. Man, this was an album that I loved back in the day, but I can't stomach it anymore. I've just heard the singles so many times, and the songs that weren't singles. Jeremy, you're going to disagree with me. The singles, or the songs that weren't singles, and there were, I think, five or six singles that came off of this.
Wow.
This album, the thing is, hindsight, you go back and you listen to those first three albums afterwards, and those have always grown on me and always been ones that I go back and listen to. And this was, all right, this was okay. This is, it was huge. It was a mass hysteria. Hysteria by Def Leppard at number four. Jeremy, your take.
Well, it's not a surprise that it's high up. It's a really good album by Leppard. I think it was that sort of transition album for them, wasn't it? Between, you know, the sort of the heavier stuff and the more melodic sort of theatrical stuff, disco-y stuff that they did later on, pop stuff, should I say. So, yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot of songs on there that you've heard and heard again. That you know you know so well, but the reason why they're in your head is because they were very, very popular at the time. And you know, I think it's a really good album. It's not one of my favorite albums, but it's a valid album to be in the top 10 because of the band and its status at the time, I think.
Hmm. Okay. Anyone else? Hysteria.
Yes. Please. It's one of my absolute favorite albums. It's a masterpiece, and it's the soundtrack of the year. That's how 87 sounded like, or 88 perhaps, but they were a bit ahead of their time. But I mean, this album is absolutely amazing, and it's for me, it's this is how I remember those years with everything that comes to it. But it's you know, I have a lot of memories to that albums, especially, you know, the ballad and you know, the whole thing. But I think it should be, it's one of the classic albums of all times, I think, because it's so different. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Hysteria.
I very clearly remember the day that I got this and put it in my car. I had a cassette player. I had such high expectations, was so excited about it because of my love for Pyromania. And, you know, the way Women starts is not, it's not, it doesn't hit you like Rock Rock Till You Drop does. And so I got anxious pretty quickly. Although the song Women does have, I think that's probably my favorite track because I think it has a pretty cool riff in it. But man, as you guys know, you go from one song to the next and it's just not the same thing. Now, I do like it, and I was forced to listen to it. I was in a, I had a real serious girlfriend, and of course, all the girls loved this album to death, along with Poison when that came out. And so, on top of MTV playing it, you know, probably every 30 minutes, whatever the single was, the girls' friends that we had were listening to it all the time. And I wanted to like it. I tried my best, you know, to get into it. But it, now it's not as bad as everything that's come after it for me. It's an album that I'll keep in my collection. But I'm not that sad if I don't have it either. It's just I understand why some people think it's as perfect as it is. But to me, it was just a different band. And I was depressed about it.
Brad, to what I mentioned before, it's so the singles were Woman, Animal, Rocket, Armageddon It, Pour Some Sugar on Me, Love Bites, and Hysteria. So it's seven singles.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. The only songs that weren't released as singles are Gods of War, Don't Shoot Shotgun, Run Riot, and am I missing anything? Excitable. And there's maybe one more that I don't remember off the top of my head.
Wow. Yeah, you can't hide from this album. It was everywhere. Yeah. And it was enormous and sold millions and millions and millions. And yeah, I kind of feel the same way Ed did about it. It was like, yeah, that's not what I wanted. But, you know, that's okay.
You are right, though, Victor. It was a landmark change in the glam metal scene, especially. There was something that, you know, up until that point, you know, it was hard rock, and then some of that hard rock got, you know, kind of poppy sounding, and some of those, you know, glam looks were showing up. But then when this album came out, it seemed like every band, and of course this is probably the market, tried to repeat what Def Leppard was doing over and over again. And that's, I think that's that was the start of its downfall, because everybody tried so hard to, you know, piggyback on the coattails of Def Leppard and that sound and those looks, that it just got to be too much. Everybody got sick of it after a few years, you know, by the time the 90s rolled around.
Yeah, and this album was huge. Regardless of what I'm saying about it, it was an enormous album. It was, I think, the third biggest selling album of the entire 80s, something like that. So it's an enormous album, regardless. And I get why it was voted so high. Listen, a lot of these albums are voted where they are just based on album sales because of so many people bought them. And even though they're not great albums, they hit people at a certain point in time in their life. And that's why they voted for them. So number three is a huge fucking album. And it wasn't as huge as Hysteria. And I would take Hysteria over this album any day of the week. Again, Jeremy would probably have a different take on it, only because I know he's a massive fan, and I've never really been a fan of this band. And there's one song off of this that I really like, and the singles fucking drive me crazy off of this. But it is, depending on who you talk to, it's got different titles. It could be called Whitesnake, could be called 1987, but it is that Whitesnake album. Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, well, as you know, I'm a big Whitesnake fan, so I like all of their music. And it's not just this album, but, you know, David Coverdale's just the, to us over here in the UK, I mean, he's the greatest singer going. So, yeah, it's got some great singles on it. When it came out, it was, it had all the, you know, the top quality production on it, which, you know, moved away from the sort of bluesy stuff that they used to do in the early days into a proper, you know, rock metal sort of 80s metal band, if you know what I mean. Not the sort of metal you know now, but what we called metal back then. And it really rocked and was very successful because of Coverdale, but also because there was, you know, great singles on it. So, yeah, it deserves to be there, I think.
My question to you, Jeremy, is where's John Sykes?
That's the unanswerable question, isn't it? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
Yeah, wish he'd come back and play in Whitesnake.
I will say my favorite track off of this is Bad Boys. That's the name of it. So, and mainly because of John Sykes playing on it. Lyrics are take it or leave it, but his playing is just ridiculously good on it. Anyone else want to talk about this Whitesnake album?
You know, I really liked this record, and you wouldn't think I would, because it, I mean, it was kind of in that Bon Jovi vein, I guess, and I was, you know, a big thrash metal head by this time. And of course, this one was being forced on us by MTV. But there, you know, and even today, the more I listen to Whitesnake, the more I like this band. And every time they come on the radio, I listen to it, even the singles. My wife even makes fun of me for being a Whitesnake fan. But their videos were a lot better than Def Leppard's too. Because, you know, all those Def Leppard videos, weren't they all the same? It was just, you know, shots of them doing live shows and crowds. And it seemed like every single video was the same thing, pretty much.
Not all.
And then Whitesnake had some more interesting videos that were being, you know, forced upon us every hour of the day by MTV with Tawny Kitaen.
The late Tawny Kitaen.
That's right. Rest in peace.
I think Pour Some Sugar on Me and Armageddon It are very similar, but the other ones were all kind of different. The thing is, those two got foisted on us so much.
Yeah, that may be what it is. I can't remember.
But, okay. Number two.
Wait a second.
Go ahead, Brad.
I gotta say one thing. I'm not a huge fan of Whitesnake, although saw them, I don't know, it was the last M3 before COVID. They were headlining one night, and I gotta tell you, they were really, really, really good. And when they play Still of the Night, you can't deny how awesome that was. I mean, whether you like the song or not, it was huge, man. Huge. So yeah, there you go. Whitesnake. They're forced to be reckoned.
Who was hitting the high notes? Was it David or was it Dino?
Dino was not in the band then.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great question. Who was hitting the high notes? I don't know.
There.
David was looking good. He was out there doing his thing, man. I can't take that away from him. He's an old dude. He's out there. Well, he was out there. I don't know. Is he done? That's the question for the panel. Is Whitesnake done? I'm going to say yes.
He's saying yes.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we can move on to two. Sorry. Okay. Thanks.
Number two, I will say that number two was always between slots two and three throughout the entire voting, and it excited me that it was there the entire time. I'm surprised that this album is as high as it was, but it just goes to show what people vote for here, what the core audience votes for, I believe. And for as much as Jeremy may vote on the Whitesnakes and the Def Leppards of the world, Jeremy often surprises as well. So this was on his list. This was, I think, on a lot of people here's lists.
Emerson, Lake, and Powell?
What's that?
Emerson, Lake, and Powell?
don't make me bust that keyboard part out for Touch and Go.
Ooh.
See that? Anyway, number two. Anthrax with Among the Living. This album put the band on a lot of people's radios. As much as I like Spreading the Disease a lot more than this album, because I think this is, in my opinion, this is kind of Spreading the Disease too. You can't deny the bigger tracks off of this album, which are still staples for the band. Is it the best stuff they've released? No, but it's probably the most memorable for a lot of people that jumped on the Anthrax bandwagon at the time. But you can't deny the importance when it comes to the entire thrash genre. How important this album is because of songs like Indians and Caught in the Mosh and the title track and NFL and so on and so forth. So, Ed, for you, Among the Living, what does this album mean to you?
Yeah, this album means a lot. This, you know, this was Anthrax's year, I think. This whole year was, yeah, really all about Anthrax because of this and then also the EPs that they release.
Right.
And then going on to do the I Am the Man thing. And to me, this is their best album, my favorite. And we've talked about it before, so I won't rehash it all. But I also think that this was kind of a landmark change in metal when this record came out. You also kind of heard it in the production of Garage Days, where you're starting to hear that a heavier jug sound in a lot of those songs. And bands that came after that were incorporating a lot of that sound, and especially Pantera. You know, Pantera was taking that and, you know, just loving on that sound through all their breakdowns and the way that Dimebag, you know, shaped his tone. You can hear all of that harken back to this record and some of the stuff that was being released this year. And man, like the guitar riffs on this record too, these songs are fun to play if you're a guitar player, but they're also complicated. So it's a good workout on the guitar if you're a player. I love Dan Spitz a lot. I always enjoy listening to his playing. I feel like his guitar solos are, you know, different and set him apart from some of the other shredders of the time. It was a perfect album to follow Spreading the Disease, and definitely my favorite.
Okay. Jeremy, what made this appear on your list?
Because Anthrax were quite popular in the UK when they first came out, and this album, you know, took them on to a level. They were played on Top of the Pops quite a lot as well.
Oh wow.
So yeah, they were pretty popular. I like the style of music. It was thrash, but it was a bit different to some of the other bands. And they had a few, you know, decent singles on it. So I just thought overall, yeah, it was worthy of a top 10 album, and it was, you know, sort of stood out to me in this particular year.
Okay. Johan, did this album make any sort of impact in Sweden?
Absolutely. They were one of the bands from US that felt very fresh and very new. So big impact, great album, and they deserve to be on, you know, high on the list. So it's great album. I love it. I listen to it now and day.
Okay. Anthony, in Ireland, did Anthrax make any sort of impact?
Huge. Huge. Yeah, they played in 86. They played with Metallica here. And wow, that was amazing. That like felt like a double headliner. Like the venue was as packed for Anthrax as it was for Metallica. And then they came back a year later on this tour and headlined. And it was enormous. They had Testament with them. Like Ed said, this year was all about this album. You know, I suppose they sort of timed it right in that, you know, the big albums, let's say Rain Blood and Master of Puppets, were gone. They weren't gone, but you know what I mean. And then they're like 86, and then 87 belonged to this album. They, if they'd have been a bit quicker and came out in 86 with this, it wouldn't have been quite so huge. Yeah, but this album is great. It's it was enormous here. Anthrax were enormous, and rightly so. Like, this album sounds fresh. It sounds so good. It's nice and dry, you know. It still sounds pretty fresh. I could do without hearing Caught in a Marsh again, but, you know, this... Jeez, the songs on this album, like I Am the Law, is so, such a great song.
Yeah, that's another one that I forgot. I Am the Law. Yeah, absolutely. Dan, for you guys out in California, East Coast thrash, what did you guys think, you know, the homestead of Metallica and Slayer? And even though for most people associate them to the Bay Area, they're technically from your area. They're closer to being from your area than they were from the Bay Area.
Yeah.
What would it like for you guys to hear Anthrax and compare it to what you guys had from the homegrown California bands?
Yeah, what's already been said is these Anthrax hit just at the right time when this came out. I bought the album when it came out, and I can still listen to it today. It was huge. I bought all the EPs. They were everywhere. They were just pumping at the right time, and they were hitting it on all these songs came out at the right time. Maiden was going strong. It was a good time to be alive for music. And Anthrax knocks it out with this album. It probably is maybe their best one of all time. And then, but they've had great albums too. But this one is among the top of them for sure. And I can say that when I saw Anthrax not too long ago with Joey in the band, that I was right under the microphone of Scotty Naughty Ian. And I got to shout out among the living lyrics right in front of him. I was yelling as loud as I could. And he said later in an interview that the Anaheim show, the Mouse House was one of the best ones on the tour. So I credit me for yelling and being a fool.
And Ed, you brought up a good point because the I'm the Man EP was the biggest selling EP of all time up until a few years ago. So for a metal band to have that long of a run with having the most, the biggest selling EP for such a long time is a big deal. And it's a big contrast. I mean, it was them fucking around doing a rap song, sampling Rodney Dangerfield's Easy Money. While the lyrics come from Easy Money, they're sampling Metallica, they're sampling all types of different things. It was really out there, and you know, it always kills me when people credit Run DMC and Anthrax. Oh, well, this was the start of the rap rock connection. It's like, no, Anthrax did more for that than any other band between I'm the Man and then their cover of Bring the Noise.
Didn't Iron Man start off as the B-side to By the Law, wasn't it? I remember getting that at the time, and you know, it was like you discovered this secret B-side. B-side, and then they went ahead and actually released it.
Yep. Yeah, about the EP from, you know, they were all over Kerrang, and you know, you went to your local record store and it was an import. I have it in the shelf over there, and you were surprised. They took a lot of criticism for the I Am the Man thing, and screw them. They were right, you know?
Absolutely. Brad, where did Anthrax Among the Living hit you? This is the answer, the question of the evening.
Wow. Well, I was living in a different world in 87, and it missed me. It just missed me. I am sorry. I became a fan later. So, but
different world in 87, but you know what Brad was doing? He was thinking about the bucket hat that he would be wearing in 2024, the Signals Brad from Mars hat. Bucket hat.
It's the, I get the most compliments for this hat than all of my hats. So yeah, I would wear these to an Anthrax show. I've never seen Anthrax. I would actually go see them now if they'd come anywhere near here or play any show.
I've seen them with three different singers. How about that?
That's impressive. That's impressive. I tell you what I really want. I want to go to a show with Metal Dan when he's got that feeling like he had at the Anthrax show. That's what I'm looking for, man. I want to go to a show where it's just like you just can't help it, yell and scream and sing along, and that's what it's all about, man. That's why we love this music, is you know, the way it makes us feel. And yeah, I'm looking for that.
Well, if I wasn't here, maybe I might be at one right now. Judas Priest playing in Dublin tonight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We gotta stay in task here, but while Victor's selling stuff, which everybody should buy that hat.
Yeah, that's a cool hat.
Everybody should buy the shirt that Jeremy's wearing. I need a Signals from Mars hoodie, too.
Both Jeremy and I are sporting the same
hoodie. Yeah, there we go.
Hoodie today. Yeah. Look at that. Like
I gotta tell you, Anthony, I saw Judas Priest, was it last year? Something like that. And I enjoyed it, but I wasn't standing up singing. It just wasn't there. But I gotta tell you.
Yeah, look, you don't have to tell me. I'm not there. I didn't go. I had no intention to go.
But what I've seen from KK's Priest, I would love to go see them, man. They're making that music really live big time. And their songs are okay too, but yeah. The problem seeing a band like that is when you saw them in the 70s when they were really like, holy crap. You go now and you're like, yeah, this is good, but you know.
So are we not going to talk about number one since everyone knows what it is? We can just skip it.
It's going to be great. Yeah.
I don't need to talk about this one.
Metal Dan and I both pushed to get the Dirty Looks Cool from The Wire at number one, right, Dan?
I love that album when it first came out, and then my wife ruined it for me when she she told me everything that he's singing, I forget the guy's name, all the lyrics are bullshit. There is nothing in these songs at all. He's just making up shit. He's just making up lines. And it blew everything away, and I listened to it, and I said, all right, I'm done listening to it. So that's my Cool from the Wire album story.
Oh, no. That's terrible.
Now I'm going to ruin it for you. Listen to the lyrics.
Your wife has ruined it for me. Tell her thanks.
I said to her, what the hell?
Yeah, I know. What's the guy's? I know the guy's name, and it's slipping me right now. He's dead, though. But
all right, let's count down or recap the 10 through 2 real quickly before we go to 1. At 10, we had Kiss with Crazy Nights.
Well, I just had something bad happened there. I thought Kiss was number one. I was like, holy crap, how did this happen? It was like a bad dream.
Oh,
okay,
no.
Go ahead. Okay, 9.
9, Motley Crue, Girls, Girls, Girls. 8, Dokken, Back for the Attack. 7, Dio, Dream Evil. 6, The Cult with Electric. 5, Halloween with Keeper of the Seven Keys, Part 1. 4, Def Leppard with Hysteria. 3, Whitesnake with Whitesnake or 1987. 2, Anthrax with Among the Living. And at number 1, see if I can find the drum roll. I can't find the drum roll, can I?
I should have been ready. Well, Brad has drums right behind him.
Yeah, I could go.
Good idea.
At number 1, Kansas with Power.
Ooh, yes.
At number 1, Appetite for Destruction, Guns N' Roses.
Look, I can put that album on now and with my headphones and hear things that I don't hear each time or whatever. I think it's just perfectly mixed and all that. And I think it's one of the best albums of all times, and I know it's not on Johan's. But, yeah, that's why.
Yeah, you can't deny this album. It's place in history. You just can't deny it. And what are you going to do?
The album is, I
put it between this and it's a more important album than Whitesnake. I thought Whitesnake's was like number 2, but as far as being huge in the world of music and legacy and that kind of thing.
Well, let's consider that what you just said for a second, okay. Brad, because right. This album is still selling tours because True. This. Bulk of what
they made a whole career off of one album.
Yeah. This album actually has sold more than Kiss has for their entire catalog. Mm-hmm. Appetite for Destruction has sold more than all of Motley Crue's catalog.
Wow.
So consider what a big album this is. A lot of these albums, we keep going back to the same thing, though. They had, you know, the Hysteria and the Whitesnake album and this. They all had huge singles. And not just one big single. They all had 3 to 4 to, like, the Def Leppard had 7. This Appetite for Destruction had, as Johan said before, Welcome to the Jungle, Sweet Child of Mine. Mr. Brownstone, Paradise City.
It's a perfect album. The only thing that's wrong with it is it's been played too much, and I need more of it, and I need another one with more of the same but just different. Uh-huh. Put it on with headphones and listen to that back and forth of the guitars. Listen to things, the drums are just popping. It's just great. It's a perfect album.
Yeah.
Did this one sell more than Hysteria? I would say no, but I might be wrong.
Maybe at this stage.
At this stage, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Possibly at this stage, yes, but at the time, no, definitely not. And let's not forget, this album took
about when it came out. When it came out, it flopped.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, because I saw them, after this album came out, I saw them warm up for Iron Maiden, and it was like no big deal, you know. Like, oh, who are these guys? So yeah, I kind of know. I know a couple of these songs, and it was not a big deal.
And then during that tour, the album hit, the single hit, and they said, "See you, Maiden. We're out of here. We are huge now." And it was just like that. It was like 1 week. It was magic. MTV and everything happened with the single, and then LA Guns came on that tour to replace them for the Maiden. They were supposed to play Long Beach with GNR, and it didn't happen because they said, bye, we're going to go headline now.
Yeah, so Hysteria has sold 20 million over all these years, and Appetite for Destruction has sold 30.
Woo.
So over all the years, that happened. And that's interesting because I'm sure that they probably had to pay to get off the tour somehow, but they were about to, you know, rock it off and be possibly the biggest band in the world, biggest rock band in the world around that time. I remember, and I've told this story a bunch of times. I remember coming to Spain the year before and having somebody ask me, what's the big band that nobody knows of here? And I said, Poison. Okay. And then somebody telling me, no, they'll never take off. And then coming back the next year, seeing that they had the Poison back patch, they had dyed their hair blonde and had it all poofed out. And I said, nah, they're done. It's Guns N' Roses now. Like, who the hell knows Guns N' Roses? I'm like, you will. And that following year, sure as shit, because I remember coming back and Sweet Child of Mine had hit in the States. Nobody knew who they were the month before I left. And the month after when I came back, they were everybody's favorite band all of a sudden. I'm like, you didn't know who the fuck they were 3 weeks ago. What are you talking about? And next year.
Yeah, it was Sweet Child of Mine that really did it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Sweet Child of Mine is the one that because Welcome to the Jungle was released as a single twice. It was released as a single, got no traction. They released Night Train as a single. That didn't do anything. Then they released Sweet Child of Mine. And then that's when they went back, re-released Welcome to the Jungle, Paradise City, Mr. Brownstone, and I mean, essentially anyone who was a rock fan at the time, I think knows pretty much, especially in the States, knows for the, if not the entire album, knows 80 to 90% of the album.
Yeah.
So it was big.
All right. I have a quick question for the panel. We're done with this one, right? That's not the question.
Johan was done with it before we started discussing it.
I know. So right. I'm trying to re-engage him. Okay, number one, did anybody vote for Gary Moore, Wild Frontier?
You know, I looked at it.
I could have.
No.
Anthony, Anthony?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I know the album, but I didn't vote
for it. Is Gary Moore not the big icon in his home country that –
Gary Moore is very popular here.
Okay. It seemed like a big moment for him. Well, I know what. I was watching a concert of him supporting this album in Sweden, Johan. It was in Stockholm, I think. Huge crowd.
Yep.
And he had big stage production, the whole thing, and was tearing it up. So I thought, well, holy crap, Gary Moore was huge somewhere in Sweden.
Yes.
He was huge everywhere in Europe. I didn't know who he was. And I remember in 87 going to a summer camp. And this kid that was at the camp, all he kept talking about was Gary Moore, Gary Moore, Gary Moore. He's the greatest guitarist ever. And it's Gary Moore. He's the fastest guitarist. And he's this and he's that. And I got Wild Frontier. And I was like, it's good, but it just wasn't the same as a lot of the other stuff that I was listening to. And I'll be honest, when he started putting out the blues stuff, and I know Jeremy's going to kill me for this, I hated it because I felt that After the War was a really good album as well. And it just seemed like he couldn't crack it in America. So he just decided to change his style to see if he could give it a go in the States. And those blues albums got his foot in the door on US radio.
Yeah.
I always thought Gary Moore was, you know, unbelievably amazing guitar player, but not a great songwriter.
No.
His best work was with Thin Lizzy, you know, where he wasn't writing. And there's a lot of guitarists like that. You know, it's the Yngwie syndrome, you know. Amazing guitar players, but crap songwriters.
Yeah, and that's what I think. Wild Frontier, that was the thing that hit me. It was very overpolished. It was, you know, the songs were okay. His soloing was out of this world. But then the song compositions themselves were like, okay, this is kind of boring. Oh, wow, the solo is really good. Okay, the rest of the song is just, it's all right. I mean, it's not to say that it sucks, but there was so much stuff. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we're talking about here, from this list and other things that we didn't talk about, there's a lot of good music that came out this year and that didn't make it. And a lot of people voted. And a lot of people voted from all parts of the world. So,
all right. So Johan, I assume you voted for Rush.
Yes, I did.
All right. Okay.
He wasn't the only one. There were more people that voted for Rush, but I will tell you that
get him in the top 10. Okay.
Hold your fire. Hold Your Fire was 24.
Yes. Great album, great sign of the times, but the other sign of the times could be Anthrax and Guns N' Roses. So I can understand that, but I cannot understand how you talk about Gary Moore. He's a hero here in Sweden.
Very nice.
And as you said, Victor, he was selling out every arena here. And I think those albums that you're talking about, Wild Frontier, Run for Cover. I mean, wow. I mean, those are sign of the times. Excellent heavy metal albums. The rest he did afterwards, good, but not close. So, but Rush, they are not on this list because they are above it. Of course. Yeah, of course.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Hold Your Fire is an album that's AOR. Absolutely. But it's so well done. It sounds like it's so crispy. It's so good. And the songs are, I mean, it's the best. It's not the best Rush album ever made, but it's like, it's in the 80s album. It's almost perfection. Not Power Windows, but great. So, it's a shame.
Okay.
Maybe next year.
1988.
Yeah.
And Jeremy, you're probably wondering if I voted for UDO Animal House, and the answer is no.
Oh, okay.
just to touch on some of those, Ed asked about Testament the Legacy. That ended up at 20.
All right.
Not bad.
What about the greatest album of that year, which was Aerosmith's Permanent Vacation? Aerosmith didn't even make the top 10.
Permanent Vacation. I was just on the UDO. UDO was 42.
It was voted for. Wow.
Yes, it was.
Wasn't me. It wasn't me, Jeremy.
No.
There's a couple of good songs on there, but...
Let's see.
Permanent Vacation. It's got to be pretty high. It's got to be like 14 or something, I would imagine.
25.
That's a disgrace.
All right.
25. Well, I'll give you guys this. Since I did 15-1 before, 25 is Aerosmith. 24 is Rush. 23. I said that this got quite a few votes. Depeche Mode's Music for the Masses.
Cool.
22. Racer X with Second Heat. 21. Great White, Once Bitten. 20. Testament with the Legacy. 19. Death Angel with the Ultraviolence. 18, Macaulay Shanker Group with Perfect Timing. 17, Faith No More, Introduce Yourself. And 16, Death with Scream Bloody Gore.
Nice.
Wow. It's a diverse list. There's a lot of different
pleasures of the flesh.
Types of music here.
Anybody else vote for Exodus other than me?
Exodus was 32.
Because that was a good album that year.
No one vote for Faster Pussycat.
Faster Pussycat was actually voted on by multiple people as well. That's 28.
Wow. That's an interesting album.
That's a perfect album.
Yeah, it's great.
Wow. Well, one song's kind of floppy, but yeah, near perfect.
Cool. All right, so...
And Twisted Sister did not make it, right? Because that's an awful album.
Twisted Sister, believe it or not, Steve Hoker, who had voted for Twisted Sister number one, I think he won't mind me sharing this. Twisted Love is for Suckers is number 30 on here. So he voted at number one and a day later writes me. He goes, you know what? I love Twisted Sister, but... Appetite for Destruction should be number one.
Wow.
So he switched them.
Seriously, out of 64 albums is not bad.
No. And that's
surprisingly high, actually.
Yeah. King Diamond Abigail, 33.
Yeah, that's not right. with Twisted Sister, that above it.
Oh. The problem is, what I mentioned before, is popularity. The Twisted Sister, more people bought that than Abigail, so more people voted for it over Abigail. I mean, we could go down the list with all this stuff, and even still, there's shit that was ultra commercial, but I think that over the years probably faded. For some people, so it isn't as high. White Lion, Pride, 43, for example. So, and that was a big album that year.
Huge.
What about Malice?
Nobody voted for Malice. That was another one. The closest thing to Malice on here were a lot of things that Dan voted for between... Lizzie Borden and Keel and...
Ooh.
And the Leather Wolf album, which is just about perfect. The only thing that's better is the EP. And they played last Friday, the three of them, in Anaheim. I couldn't go. My wife wasn't with me. I didn't want to cheat on her on that. But they're still relevant. And Michael Oliveri is still sounding amazing with his vocals. It's a great album. I'm glad they're still around.
Leather Wolf by Leather Wolf, 34. So, Guys, on that note, I do want to thank you all for joining me tonight. I do want to thank Sean and Edgar who joined us in the chat. I want to thank everyone that listens to the replay of this or watches it. Did your favorites make the list? How do you think things shake out? Are you, like Johan, and upset with how things turned out?
Me too.
You got to vote. And you get, yeah, you if you didn't vote, don't be upset.
Yeah. Vote next month. Let's see what we decide to do next month. I'll announce that shortly.
Yeah, Edgar, you need to get in here and vote.
Yeah. That's it, Edgar. Follow us on social media and vote. Awesome. On that note, we will end the episode here. Thanks once again, and we will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See you, folks.
Thank you for listening to the Signals from Mars podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.